If you remember for review what we talked about on Wednesday night, David was frail entering into the end of his life. He passes away today, and we see that. We have another rebellion by Adonijah, which would have been his oldest son that was still alive. And David reacts to that after being notified of that by Nathan and by Bathsheba, right? And he sends Nathan and Zadok, Benaniah, to anoint Solomon as the king in front of all. That had already been announced, but we see that he has to actually go through that process. And that rebellion is ended, and the men who had gone against him then submit their allegiance, pledge their allegiance to Solomon as being king. But today, we're going to see David in his few last words to Solomon. Let me go and grab, I think I left some of my notes in the back. So we'll start here in 2 Kings, just a second. All right, so some of the things that that Solomon tells, that David tells to Solomon right here at the end of his life, in the beginning of the chapter 2, we see that one of the main things that David says now in verse 4 and 5, that he's... We'll read 1 through 5 real quick, just to orient us. As David's time to die drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, "I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and his testimonies according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn. So that the Lord may carry out his promise which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons are careful of their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Now, you also know..." Let's stop right there because that goes into the next piece. So he encourages him in verse 3 and in verse 4 to continue to follow in the ways of the Lord. In most of this chapter, we'll see him telling, in the next 4 verses, we'll see him telling Solomon to make sure that he uses his wisdom. In verse 6 and in verse 9, I believe, he refers to Solomon and his wisdom. But first and foremost, he wants Solomon to follow the Lord and to maintain that way. And we see, as we talked about on Wednesday, there's only a few chapters that we actually see the life of Solomon. And we see that in the beginning that seems to be the case, then he has some issues. And hopefully he turns at the end of his life, but over the next few classes we'll read more about Solomon and his life, but not a lot is recorded there. So he tells him to follow the Lord God. And in verse 6, it begins, "So act according to your wisdom," and he's referring to Joab there. And in verse 9, he says, "Now therefore, do not let him go unpunished, for you are a wise man." So those two references to Solomon and his wisdom are given to us from David. But it begins, okay, you have something? Right. Right. And once again, and I think we cover this. I certainly talk about it with the high schoolers or younger. Is I often say, you know, God has given them a promise, but is that promise unconditional? No. What do they have to do? They have to continue to maintain that love and the law of God so that that promise can be fulfilled. And we see David, as he knows that he made the mistakes in his life, and because of that, consequences occurred. And now he's warning and charging Solomon of the same thing, to be careful and have his sons be careful in walking in his way. And you're right, because we know the rest of the story, we see what happens after Solomon passes and the kingdom splits. So that's a good point. So now, in verses 5 and 6, that's really talking about, remember the acts of Joab. What has Joab done? That's listed here in verse 5. He's taken innocent blood, right? He's killed two. Now, has he not killed more than these two, Amasa and Abner? Right. He killed Absalom against the will of David, right? And was he not a man in the army? So didn't he shed blood there? But what are the two cases that are brought up that are against Joab? The two are Abner and Amasa. Why would those be the two that would be mentioned by David specifically? Because they were revenge, right? Because it was all about his own personal desire to, you know, why was Abner killed? His brother, Ahaziel, at least I got it mouthed to me, right? His brother Ahaziel was killed by Abner, but that was during war, right? However, Joab takes it upon himself to enact revenge specifically. Okay, now what about Amasa? Remember that? We just studied that not too long ago. What happened there? Remember he walks up to him acting like he was going to give him a hug or something, and he takes his dagger and he cuts his, basically slices him in the middle and kills him right there in front. In fact, so shocking that even the men of Israel that were walking by stood there and, I mean, couldn't even move until his body was dragged off the road. But was that done in an act of war? No, it was just straight murder. Who was Amasa? He had been the commander of an army, but which one? Yeah. Absalom's army, right? The one who had opposed David, and here Joab being a faithful servant of David the whole time, goes and takes revenge and says, you know, basically, I don't really like the fact that you're doing this. It was his own cousin even, but he kills him anyway. So these are the two things that Joab has done, which we would consider today just straight murder, right? The act of killing during war at this time is not considered murder. We actually don't even consider that really murder today, because we're acting on behalf of the government whenever we're being told to do that. But here are just personal acts of revenge that Joab has. And so David wants Solomon to remember those acts of Joab, and then to use his wisdom, right? And makes a statement about not letting his gray hair go down to Sheol. He talks about the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite. Now, this is the man who, when David left Jerusalem and fled to the east side of the Jordan, this man helped him by giving him provisions, safety, security, and it says, and it indicates that he was with him basically the whole time, because he brings David all the way back to the Jordan and doesn't cross over with him, but then gives him a son and says, please take care of my son, because David offers to care for him. But at the time, he states he's an 80-year-old man, and he just needs to go back to his home. So he wants him to remember those acts and make sure that he takes care of the sons, of his sons, as David had promised. But then he brings up in verse 8, Shimei. Okay, and that's the way I'm going to say it. There's probably like six ways to say it, but I'm just going to stick with Shimei. So who is Shimei? I think all my people that speak up are gone today. If we remember, he is the man who, when David leaves Jerusalem, right, because Absalom is about to come in, he throws rocks and he curses David. And if you remember, at the time, what's that? No, that's what I was trying to think of. It was Abish, right? It was Joab's brother. I've lost his name, but he wanted to just kill him then. Abish, okay. Then, but David says, what if he is actually sent from the Lord? Because at the time, David didn't know why Shimei would be doing this, but if we remember, Shimei is from the tribe of Benjamin and would have been in the feather, right? It wasn't necessarily that he was cursing me, and therefore the one who believes or had be given to Adonijah as a wife, or Abiathar the priest, and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. King Solomon tells Adonijah, or the servant, says, if he is a worthy man, not one of his hairs will fall to the ground, but if wickedness is found in him, he will die. So now what has Solomon seen in Adonijah at this point? He sees some of the wickedness of his heart, the desire to continue, even though he is not chosen by the Lord to be the king. He comes into his mother, in verse 15, trying to make that point that I really should still be that, but all I want is this. So Solomon then gets frustrated, right, and then executes an action against Adonijah and sends out Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him and he died. Right? So in verse 22, we saw his reaction. So now Solomon has an opportunity as king to start addressing this rebellion of Adonijah against what is his throne and what should have always been his throne, after David had announced that and the Lord had selected him. So, do you think the word about Adonijah's death would have traveled pretty fast? Especially to those who were very loyal to him and took on the rebellion. It does. And so Abiathar is, if we remember, one of the two high priests. Right? So now Solomon calls for him in verse 26, and he tells him to go to Anathoth, to his own field. And what's the statement here? For you deserve to die, but I will not put you to death at this time, because you carried the ark, the Lord my God, before my father David, and because you were afflicted in everything with which my father was afflicted. Abiathar, if we remember, his father was killed by Doeg. And these were in my notes, so I'm having to go off of this in my mind here to maybe really, really a problem. But Doeg had killed his father, because his father had helped hide and fed, David the showbread. So Doeg goes in, kills him. He was the high priest. Bithar, his son, who should have been taken over as the high priest in that case, actually runs away and stays with David during the entire time that he's running away from Saul. So because of that situation, and he knows how much David was with him, he allows him to go back to his home, kind of strips him of his power, though, and sends him back home. Now, it's at this time that we believe that Saul sets up Zadok as the high priest, and that's why we're in a situation right now where both of these men are high priests. Now, it says in verse 27, so Solomon dismissed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord in order to fulfill the word of the Lord, which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. So, what did the Lord say to Eli in Shiloh? Do you remember that? Where it's found? If you go back to 1 Samuel, the second chapter. So if we remember, in the beginning of 1 Samuel, Eli is a priest. Samuel, remember, is given to him and lives with him because of Hannah and her plea to the Lord. It says that she wants a child, and that if she has the child, she'll dedicate him to the Lord. So in the second chapter, we read about the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas. What's told about his sons? Remember those two? Are they really good priests? Yeah, at least they got nose, right? Yeah, no, they were doing things, that they shouldn't have done, and they were more about making sure that they got more of everything than they should have. So, I remember the story about, they were supposed to wait until the meat got boiled and then they could put a fork in there and pull out a portion, and that would be their portion. Because once the meat was boiled, it would fall apart, right? And they would only get a portion of it. Well, they would stick their fork in early to make sure that they get this big old slab of meat out, right? So that was one thing that they did, just to make sure that they had more. And, they did many things that were all about making sure that they were taken care of in ways that the Lord had not prescribed for them. But one of the biggest issues is Eli. Because what does he not do about that? He doesn't correct them. We see that in David as well, unfortunately. But Eli here does not correct his sons. So because Eli doesn't correct his sons, we see in chapter 2 in verse 30, in 31, I guess, a little bit before that as well, but in 31 it says, behold, the days are coming when I will break your strength and the strength of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house. You will see the distress of my dwelling in spite of all the good that I do for Israel, and an old man will not be in your house forever. Yet I will not cut off every man of yours from my altar, so that your eyes will fail from weeping and your soul grieve, and the incense of your house will die in the prime of life. The next verse in 34 talks about Hophni and Phinehas will both die on the same day. In chapter 3, we actually see, actually I guess it's in chapter 4. In chapter 4 and verse 11, we see the announcement they had taken the ark into battle. Another situation what they shouldn't have done. They've taken the ark into battle and they were overrun by the Philistines, and Hophni and Phinehas die together on the same day. And then if we remember, when Eli is told of that, he's on a stool, right? He falls back and he himself dies as well. But this promise is given to Eli that eventually those in his family will not be on the throne or will not be a high priest. Bob makes a point, goes all the way back to Aaron in Numbers, the 20th chapter. We see that Phinehas was the son of Eleazar, who was the son of Aaron. And so the line of the high priest was really coming through the son of Eleazar. But Abiathar was actually of the line of, Ithamar. And we can read that in 1 Chronicles 24, verses 3 through 6. It tells us who Abiathar came from. We studied that a couple of weeks ago. Who Abiathar came from and who Zadok came from. So we see that by this decision of Solomon and removing Abiathar from the high priesthood, that Zadok is restored, and Zadok is actually of the proper line under Eleazar, all the way back to the line of, falling from Aaron. So that I believe is why that the comment is made that he dismissed him in order to fulfill the word of the Lord, which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli. Stated that we don't really know when the high priest changed. It would have been sometime during the judges, because we weren't tracking all of the high priests throughout that time frame. So at some point they changed, and this is a situation we have when we ran into two of them. Okay. So then in the next few verses, we see Joab, and we see what he does as he finds out that Adonijah has been killed. He runs and he grabs onto the horn of the altar. And when Benaniah is told to go and kill him, his reaction is, in verse 30, he says, "No, for I will die here." So Benaniah goes back to Solomon and says, this is what he's saying, he's going to die there. And Solomon's reaction to that is, then go with that, right? Strike him down there. So he dies there and we see that it's because he shed blood without cause for Abner and Amasa. So he is executed for his crimes against that. So he committed murder, and therefore the proper punishment for that is death. And Solomon carries that out. Now, we have a situation where we have Shimei. So, at this point, Solomon also makes an agreement with Shimei and says, because my father, promised that you would not die, you need to move back here into Jerusalem. But I'm telling you, if you cross over the brook Kidron, then on that day you will die. So this is pretty simple. You can't leave the city, basically. You have to live here. But if you do that, and then you're fine. But what happens? Well, Shimei, of course, agrees to this, right? If you're given, I can kill you now, or if you move to Jerusalem and live right here in the city, it's a pretty simple choice for him, but he goes along, everything's fine. So he lives there for 3 years. Then he has a couple of his servants who run away. They go off to Gath, and they're hiding from him. So he saddles up a donkey, it says, and he takes off after them to gather them and brings them back. And then Solomon is told of this journey. So Solomon brings him in, and he talks to him about the promise, It says in verse 42, the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, did I not make you swear by the Lord and solemnly warn you, saying, you will know for certain on that day you depart and go anywhere, you shall surely die. And you said to me, the word which I have heard is good. So why then have you not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment which I have laid on you? Because of that, in 44, it says, you know all the evil which you acknowledge in your heart, which you did to my father David. Therefore, the Lord shall return your evil on your own head. And Benaiah then goes and strikes him down. And so he is now taking care of these, of the situations that David warns him of, ask him to make sure that he's wise about. And so that's, it winds up, the second chapter ends with the statement, thus the kingdom was established in the hands of Solomon. So, that's pretty much all that was in the chapters, in the readings that we were given. But in the book that we're studying from, in the Waldron book that we're studying from, he takes the opportunity to also, at the death of David, talk about some of the other psalms that David wrote, but we don't necessarily know when. So there's a significant list here. I think as I went through the book and I started counting the psalms that are referred to from the beginning of the stories here with Saul and when David begins, and then all the way to here, we see about 40, 42, 43 psalms, I think, total, that are attributed to David and that are woven into the story. These, of course, are not woven because we don't know exactly what the times are. So, you know, in Acts, the second chapter, in Acts, the 12th chapter, I think. Sorry, I need to go a little. This is where my memory fails me. Thank you. Yeah, see, my notes are on the slides, so we'll make Justin sound pretty smart back here. He can just read my notes on the bottom of the slides. But Acts 13, verse 22, we see a quote that says that David is a man after God's own heart. Now, that refers back to 1 Samuel 13, 14. Thank you. And in 1 Samuel 13, verse 14, that is the time when God is talking to Samuel about the choosing of David and why he chose him. Okay. And he's choosing him because he's a man after God's own heart. If you remember, when David is chosen, Samuel's told to go to the house of Jesse. And what does Samuel do? He has all the sons of Jesse come through. Right? And he starts with the oldest one. All right. This got to be him. This has got to be him. He goes all the way down. And Jesse himself is like, well, this is, you know, he's like, well, do you have another son? Because none of these are the ones that the Lord picked. And David is then chosen as a ruddy man and small in stature. So it's not the physical aspect of the sons of Jesse that you would pick if you were just going from a human standpoint. But God was looking for his heart. So if we look at some of these psalms and we realize some of the themes that David writes throughout the psalms, I think it reveals his character and why he was chosen as a man after God's own heart. In Psalm the 8th chapter, it begins and ends with, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. His view of God and how he is the most important and one who you should follow. Right? In Psalm 14 and 53, they both start with, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And it would help us to remember that. I think there's a lot of times where we have to watch out that we don't act like there is no God, because that is foolish. But the fool says that there is no God. We see that we can look around us and see creation and all these things, even with the advancement of science today. We keep learning and learning the complexity of just the human body and how we don't understand how all that works still. But at some point, there are those who try to explain that by massive amounts of time and accidents, right? And that's really foolish. In Psalm 139, verses 7 through 10, Psalm 139, 7 through 10. It begins in 139 talking about, you have searched me and you know me, you know all of these things about me, like when I sit down, when I stand up, and you understand. But it says in 7 through 10, where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold upon me. Thinking about God and how he is everywhere, and seeing David be able to articulate this through the things that happen in his own life. He knows that, you know, when he messes up, that God is there, and God sees that, and you know, he has proof that he has these consequences that occur when he messes up. But he also knows that God said he would take care of him, and he ran, and he hid in caves, and he did all this to stay alive because Saul was hunting him down, and yet God cared for him the whole time. And we think about the comments of, you know, he inquired of the Lord. When David is doing that, David really shows that he understands God and his role in his life. So I think one of my favorite parts of, Psalm, the 19th chapter, we sing a song, in the book about this. I was gonna look it up, but it's Psalm 19 in the book. So, but in 7 through 10 talks about the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandments of the Lord are pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. When he speaks that, some of my favorite verses, some of Kimberly's favorite verses in the Bible as well, but just understanding that he believes that what the Lord has said and what the Lord does is so righteous and so pure, and they should be what drives us, not our own desires. So I think important that we understand that. So in the last minute or so, we don't have much time, but some thoughts about this particular lesson. I think one thing that we don't see late in the life of David is the decisiveness that we see in Saul. So we see Saul, or Solomon, I said Saul, Solomon. So Solomon here is given the opportunity to do the things that he ought, right? To react to Joab because of the law breaking that he did. And he doesn't, dance around the subject and try to ignore it, right? He just says, you know, you executed men that you shouldn't have, and you're going to be executed yourself. And he lays the groundwork for Adonijah and the Shimei and says, if you do these things, I will not execute you. But yet they've shown themselves to be evil, right? They've shown themselves to not be a man of their word. And so they face the consequences of that. And because of his decisive actions, he also states that he's fulfilling the law of God. Next week on Wednesday we have singing, but next week we'll go and review. We see that Solomon's prayer for wisdom, and we see Solomon asking God for assistance. But here I think we see a lot of Solomon just being very decisive about how he acts and what he does. And then I think as we close David's life here, I think it's very, very important that we consider all the times that we see that David inquired of the Lord. And we have to remember that Saul's family is not on the throne today because he did not do that. Right? He was chosen by God initially to be the one who would lead, but then he chose to do things that were not in accordance with the Lord's will. He also was told specific things to do, and he chose not to follow those. And yet David, you know, the phrase, a man after God's own heart, he actually desired to understand what the Lord wanted him to do. And many times he inquired of the Lord. Now what do we see later in his life? Him failing to do that. Right? And the mistakes that he made in his covetousness of his neighbor's wife, right? He commits adultery. He commits murder. He becomes one who is not a perfect man that makes mistakes, but then he does inquire of the Lord. He does. It's his reaction to the times that he sins are very, very important. But he inquires of the Lord. So any other thoughts or comments? I didn't hear the bell, but maybe that was because I was just talking the whole time. All right. So it's 45 after. It's time for us to go. Thank you.